That's me.
Karen?
Well, in our criteria, what we're getting at with validity is the validity of the conclusion about quality that you can make. So if you have these measure scores, can you make a conclusion, you know, so you have a 60 and a 70. Can you make a conclusion about quality and compare quality when you have these scores?
All right.
So, and just, you know, just to tell you, this is validity testing. Formal validity testing is probably the area that we get the least information across measures. And you probably will see that through a lot of the measure submissions. In this case, their focus on validity was mostly about the risk model, which they've addressed in the risk adjustment. And as you all have already talked, one of the things that can certainly be a threat to making a valid conclusion are differences in case mix. So it is certainly a key component of validity of a outcome measure.
Well, that said, I would suggest that they've met this partially, that there are concerns about the categorization of patients returning and attribution, and if there are some concerns about the risk model itself. In statistics, a model with a C statistic of 0.66 is not considered. I believe it's technically considered to be a good model rather than a very good or an excellent model.
And those specifics you can address in the 2E, the specifics about the risk adjustment.
So I have a little trouble understanding validity as it flows into all these others. But I think it's a P. I'd be welcome other comments. Okay. Exclusion.
I'm seeing nodding around the table.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
P.
Okay. Exclusion. So I originally checked this off as a C because I was quite happy to see that staged procedures were excluded. But then I started thinking about the nature of the patient readmissions and the fact that there are some readmissions that don't seem to be at all attributable to the proceduralist, but above and beyond that, cardiologists involved in the care. And so I do have some concerns. We've already enumerated those. I would suggest a P on this.
Comment? Agreement? Nodding?
I guess, the optimists would say that some of this is an iterative process and that this can be defined based on future developments, but I guess the realists would say that it should be a P.
So I would actually say that this model is very much improvable, and I would support its improvement, and I would be happy to support the model if it were improved, but I have reservations as it's presently constructed. All right, so 2E is the risk adjustment, which again we've talked about, and I'm not sure I want to belabor. Comments are obviously welcome, but I have this as a P also.
Any other comments? This is a particularly important aspect of it. Be sure that everyone who's had a chance to make any comments, disagree with Dr. Ellis, agree with Dr. Ellis.
I have a question.
The risk adjustment? I'm sorry, go ahead.
If we go to partially, what does it mean? Will we just use it with the understanding there's some weaknesses to it, or there'll be an effort to make it better? I don't know what our votes mean here.
Sir, you have a combination of feedback on that, because it's one of the reasons the measure developers are here, not only to answer questions, is to hear your comments and feedback, and they are certainly welcome to take that under consideration. Within the time course of a typical project and the complexity of the measures and development of risk adjustment models, I don't think it's reasonable to think that they would make major changes to their measure in the short term. Consideration for longer term is certainly something they're hearing the feedback for. The other major audience for you, or the major audience for you, is the steering committee. And essentially, you're going to be saying, all right, this is a measure that has these characteristics, and our assessment of the risk model is it has these weaknesses. It will be up to the steering committee to decide whether as a group they can live with that or not.
And Eva, just also add that obviously the measure developers are able to provide additional information
right.
to respond to your concerns that they're listening to today, and we'll feed that back to the test.
Right, that's another option.
under 2F, identification of meaningful differences in performances, I put this as a P, but I'm not quite sure that, I guess first we should talk about it, because you really haven't described how you're going to identify and share with the public outliers. And so I'm not sure, I think the model really hasn't addressed this issue at all at this point, unless I missed something.
Well, we would argue, or I would argue, that we have, if you look at the risk-adjusted, risk-standardized readmission rate distribution across hospitals, I would argue that if you look at that distribution, you demonstrate that there is significant variation across hospitals.
Right.
Now, that is a separate issue from the identification of outliers, better than, worse than, no different than.
Well, maybe it is a P.
I'm sorry?
Maybe it is a P. Partial. It wasn't as developed as I would have expected it to be.
Well, I think that for CMS to identify outliers is a different, it's a separate process. And you look at what CMS has right now for mortality readmission, we use like a national rate, but it's really a policy decision. We need to go through a process to make that. We have several options. You know, you could follow that example, or you can use the percentile, cut in the 5 sets, you know, all the things. But
maybe this becomes an issue of usability then. How do you propose to use the measure? And maybe I shouldn't be so strict on grading out identification of meaningful differences. I've seen your through distribution of outcomes. So partly for me as a newcomer to this sort of thing, it's a bit of a semantic issue.
Mm-hmm.
So help me out.
So I think, basically the submissions didn't give us any information about in this section. So what are you saying
I think we're all talking at sort of different odds with one another, because I'm not exactly sure what, you know, the identification of meaningful differences, like the definition of that, what's the standard that's set. So, you know, is it that you're asking for? Or are you asking for how we would identify outliers, or what it would look like when implemented, number of years of data, you know, categories or buckets that we're putting these people into, or these hospitals into. So I think that's why we minimized our response to that, because number one, the goal for us was to develop a measure that could be implemented, not to constrain CMS in the way in which it would be implemented.
All right. And so the information you were referring to about the distribution within your report.
Right. So in the measure methodology report, towards the end, I think it might be page 43 or 44, 43, there is on figure 9, the distribution of the risk standardized readmission rates for the 2007 data, which is a single year of data. And I would posit that there are what I would call clinically significant differences in the hospital standardized readmission rates across that histogram.
So did everyone see what he was referring to in the report, so that you could see that there were differences in the rates across hospitals?
So you want to leave this rating as a P?
I did obviously inspect figure 9 during my review. I would actually be willing profitably to give them a C on this, but then I'm going to hold them a little more accountable on usability and fleshing that out some more.
Okay. Fair enough.
Any other comments? C? We can live with that? Everyone live with that?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. 2G, comparability of multiple data sources. This becomes even more important when, as I didn't realize as I read through this, that there were two potential data sources, ACC and direct submissions to CMS. So on that basis, they provide no evidence that data are comparable, and it's an N.
Can I do just to clarify that, again, we're kind of working through all of the nuances of these criteria, but what we had in mind with that criteria is if you were using claims data and clinical data. Even though this measure is based all on clinical data, even though there may be two mechanisms for submitting that data, it's going to be the exact same clinical data, clinical definitions. Certainly you can do that, you know, make that comment, but that's not what we actually had intended by the different data.
Okay.
Sources.
Well, I didn't mean to misconstrue
no.
Categorization.
Okay.
They essentially haven't addressed it, though.
Right. Okay.
But is it really the same data source? If, for example, the ACC has data managers coding and doing things and putting it on and entering, that isn't really the same data source to me as what goes in the hospital record.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So I think that still remains, unless you're a John Berkmeyer, Justin Dimmick, an issue of do you trust administrative data sources,
right,
versus theoretically audited registries / databases. So I'm not sure those are...
I think it's an issue, and whether we give them an N or an M. I originally ticked off non-applicable, but I didn't realize that CMS would have a separate mechanism for acquiring.
I just make the point. I think that this is sort of well outside kind of what's in the application. I think you can, I would argue, they're not applicable in this case because this is purely theoretical that the construct that Leanne is outlining here.
Well, but then you, if that's the case, then you're really submitting a measure that's only applicable to half of the hospital's performing PCI.
No, we're submitting,
so you can have it both ways.
We're submitting a measure that uses fixed definitions for risk adjustment variables and applies them using a methodology, a statistical methodology that accounts for clustering of patients, whatever. That is sort of the core of the measure that we're submitting. Is that assumption that, and you may not buy that assumption based on what you've heard, but it's the assumption that we will get clinical registry-like data that adheres to a standard set definition and can be used for risk adjustment.
Can I just say one quick thing about this? I have a couple comments for the other things, but in this particular case, I think it's just not worth your breath to talk about this. In this case, ACC would be acting as a vendor, putting the data to CMS after defining the critical definitions of each of the variables. What CMS is saying is that ACC will not be the only vendor by which hospitals can use to submit data to CMS. Like they do for the performance measures, there may be 30 vendors who can do this. Hospitals that choose to participate with ACC will be able to use ACC to send the data to CMS. Other hospitals will use other vendors. They will. They can't just restrict it. And some hospitals may opt out of the measurement like they do for the process measures. So there will be strict standards about data definitions. There will be auditing like there is for the process measures. It will be impossible for it to be perfect, but it will be an open-ended system that will allow hospitals to submit data in a standardized way to CMS through various mechanisms, not strictly only through the registry. So that to say that these are two very different data sources is to say then for the performance measures that there are 30 different data sources because they choose different vendors, even though they use standard definitions and there are standard rules imposed by CMS for the data collection. So in this case, I really don't think that this is, you know, an issue worth, you know, saying that this is different. They're just a vendor, and that they can use ACC as a vendor. Right now, 2/3 of the hospitals use ACC registry. They will easily be able to ask ACC to send that data to CMS. Others can either join the registry or have another vendor.
Could the speaker identify himself? Is that Dr. Krumholtz?
Yeah, Harlan Krumholtz.
Yes, thank you.
I think that Harlan explained better than I do. What I'm trying to say is not two data sources. CMS just cannot come in and say that we want you to pay this registry's membership fee to submit data to CMS. What CMS wants is to hold everybody has the same data quality standards to send the data to CMS.
Well, being a novice at this, I just read the comment in here, and it says if multiple data sources and methods are allowed, there's demonstration they produce comparable results. So if there's only one, there's no comparison, so you'd have to rank it an N. Yep. Correct? Because some of these other measures, there's multiple, you can use HRQ, you use whatever you want. There's multiple sources that have, I mean, it doesn't say they can't develop a second source to validate it. I mean, that's
right. This really comes out of, we have had some measures that have been submitted that say here are specifications if you use claims data. Here are specifications if you use clinical records. Here are specifications if you use EHR. So they have three sets of specifications based on three different types of data. And that's what this was originally applying to. Now, I understand your comments, and certainly those can be made. But that I'm just telling you what the genesis of this particular criterion was.
All right. So, and help me out here. Are we critiquing the written proposal, or what? These variations that we're hearing about.
We have to do both.
Because we're here,
we're critiquing the written proposal, but our conclusion has to take into account the comments that have been made.
But the score is going to be different.
Obviously, right? Yes. Yeah. And then I have to understand it to present it to the steering committee. So I'm really interested in your response.
So we could add. I mean, if there's certain documentation that you would like, we could certainly ask the steward to provide written answers to these questions.
Wasn't the proposal to merge ACC and CDR with CMS? That was the proposal.
To define
the patient cohort in terms of their being identified and their attributes characterized by ACC and CDR. I didn't see anything about getting data from other sources. Or
right, you're right. We've tried to be very careful in terms of, in our minds, this was one of our priorities, was to try and separate out measure development from measure implementation. And I know that's it may be an artificial thing, but as the contractor for the measure, we could not create a measure that would constrain CMS's ability to implement it. And there are, I believe, legal challenges to how one would implement it. So we're trying to create a measure that we feel is valid, that measures quality, and can be used to improve the care of these patients, while at the and that's what we're hoping to judge here, and not so much what the implementation is.
But I think
look for. And I know it's hard to divorce.
Thinking as an individual, I understand that you can't constrain the hospitals to. You can't force them to use ACC and CDR. And actually, I like your explanation. If I was reviewing the critique on the basis of the explanation, I'd either give you a C or a P on this. But if I'm reviewing the proposal itself as written, it's an N or maybe an M.
I thought you wanted to ask for additional clarification and written documentation.
Yeah. I think the fact that one of the reasons they're here is to help these clarifications. And if there's additional information that they're providing to give you a better sense of what's happening than they wrote, that certainly should be taken into consideration. So it's sort of a learning process back and forth of the kinds of things you want to write in here so that everybody's got the information, but also we don't want to constrain ourselves to say this and only this if additional information provides a greater understanding.
And I think part of what we're trying to get through here is the difference between the what and the how. The what is the proposal, the how is some of the refinements that we understand and need elaboration on, and the same thing is true about how an individual hospital responds to their own data. They will have a different quality assurance process to create an improvement. So the what and the how have several...
Right. Then we get to issues of feasibility on the how.
Could I just ask a quick how question of CMS, and that is, have you used multiple data sources before and found that it was easy compared to having a registry just send it to you, or have a registry and one data source or two data sources? Have you used that to put together information?
I would interpret you when say data sources and different vendors.
Yes.
Right. For
yes.
Process of care right now, we do have different vendors, as you know. And CMS also have serve as a data warehouse to receive the data, because we have to provide hospital an option that if I don't want these vendors, can I have a way to send the data to you directly? Yes, we do. So we do use different vendors. And Shani, do you know how many vendors we have for the process of care measure? That's basically...
Right. Any of the ORIX vendors can submit the process of care measures to us, and we also supply a clinical abstraction tool that hospitals can use that we provide for free.
Yeah, and once we got the data, we do have data validation process. in place to make sure the data quality standards that cross the all vendors.
Just a brief response. This is an issue across all the measures that hospitals use in general, and it might be helpful for us to provide to the committee broadly how the CART tool is used, how these multiple vendors. The idea basically, and I think you need to say, is this measure precisely sufficiently specified such that handed to a vendor, they could collect it from you if you're not part of ACC. That's really, I think, some of what we're getting at here. This is classic. When I was head of quality at the Brigham, I routinely had to submit to various vendors. It still came out of my data sources of what my C-section rate was, for example, but is the measure precisely specified enough?
But if the abstractors are different, if there's a different cohort of abstractors, one submitting to ACC and CDR, one submitting to something else, are we really certain that the data are the same?
I think that's why these data are audited. I mean, I think that's why
they're not audited.
They are on the
process care measure we do have.
So here's what I would suggest.
Yeah.
I think that you really haven't met this measure at all. It sounds like you could if you went to the trouble of trying to prove it to us, but this particular application has not met this criteria.
It's interesting though, because then you end up with a horse and cart issue, is that you can't move towards implementation without NQF approval.
So I would,
and you
I would,
can't, and so you can't get the construct.
Well, I would take data. I would take data from your PCI mortality model. I would think that would be relevant. It's not quite the same, but if you can demonstrate to me that it's the same from different vendors, I would take that, and I would vote for either C or a P. But you haven't even addressed this issue.
When you say the mortality models, what aspect are you talking about? Because
so
it was developed in exactly the same place, and it's in exactly the same place
now. Your risk adjustment parameters can't be the same.
No. I'm saying it was developed in the same process of using NCDR data, but there's, again, no expectation that all the data would come to CMS through the NCDR.
No, I understand that.
This criteria, we weren't thinking of. It points out a good thing that we need to clarify in terms of what do we mean by different data sources. But the idea was like clinical things coming from the clinical record versus things coming from
grosser differences
from claims. Because process, like we were talking about, there can be various vendors. We weren't really thinking of that as different data sources. So I'm just.
I agree. Vendor is the mechanism for us to collect data from one source, that's hospital's clinical chart data.
So can I ask a question? Is this something that you subject all the measures that you receive to? Do you always require, whoever is submitting the measure to prove to you that those sources are comparable, especially clinical versus administrative databases, and if not, are we really holding this measure to a higher standard than the other measures? Am I missing something?
That's what we're saying, is that if a measure is specified to say, well, you can collect, if you want to do it using claims data, you use these particular codes. But if you're going to collect this data doing clinical records, then you look for these data items. What we would like to see is that if you have one entity collecting, computing a score with claims data and another computing a score with clinical data, are they comparable? Can you do comparisons? Would you have valid information?
So if it's really intended to be a sort of at that relatively coarse level,
mm-hmm.
First of all, I would suggest that you spell that out in your document.
Right.
We can respond to that. But if that's the intention, then I guess I would go back to the way I originally ticked this off and make it not applicable.
Exactly, because it's really just clinical data.
All clinical data.
Yeah.
Right.
But thank you. We're going to have another task force looking at these criteria. So that's good feedback.
And I think 2H is the disparities in care, and I believe it's a non-applicable.
Yeah.
All right. Usability. Well, is it meaningful, understandable, and useful largely to the public, as I understand that from the perspective of the public? And I think the answer is yes.
Public writ large.
Yeah. So I vote for a C on that. Is it harmonized? I think to a large extent it is harmonized. For the most part, we do report 30-day outcomes We haven't, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but we look at readmission, sort of unspecified readmission, though we critique that as an issue elsewhere on the evaluation in terms of, does it meet the issues, or does it meet the harmonization?
The other harmonization would be other PCI measures that we have, such that if you're measuring the mortality and you're measuring the readmission, you're measuring the same patient population, such that a hospital is, you know, not having to reconfigure their whole thinking around who the patients are in the target of the measure. On the mortality, oops, it's different on the readmission. We're going to count a whole, you know, bunch of different or fewer or whatever. That kind of thing drives everyone nuts and leads to information that's not useful.
Point of clarification then, for the mortality model, how are stage procedures handled?
So there was a blanking period for 30 days after?
No, I'm not talking about, for the mortality, I'm asking about harmonization. I understand how you're doing it.
Yeah.
Are the stage procedures counted as two independent procedures in the mortality?
That's what I'm trying to answer, actually, is that there's a blanking period where in that 30-day period, any additional PCIs is not an index hospitalization.
For the mortality model. I'm not talking about rehospitalization. I'm talking about mortality. It's blanked also? In that case, permanent. Okay.
I have a question about staging. Is that adequately defined in that there has to be a statement about staging in the index admission?
Well, so that's very interesting.
Because
in the ACDR database, the answer is yes.
Right.
But from other means of acquiring this, we don't know.
Thank you, sir.
But, because someone can have a clinical change by a phone call and then come in for a second PCI, but it's based on information that may not be captured in a clinical record.
Can I address that? So the current version of the NCDR does not capture, there's no field for stage procedures. There will be in version 4, which is starting to accumulate data. And going forward.
The current version now,
yeah.
It has it, yes.
But not the measure that we, not using the data that we were developing the measure on. I think the way we define staged procedures at this time is using a combination of, number one, that the patients have a procedure, and the absence of what we would characterize as an acute cardiovascular code, so codes for MI, heart failure, arrhythmia, and I think those are defined in the methodology report. that is currently how we're defining staged admissions for MI, so it is harmonized across that measure, and then we actually have spoken with some researchers up at Beth Israel who have looked at and actually applied this criteria. I don't have the data to share with you, but they came at this with a relatively suspicious thinking that it would not work, and actually they said that at the end that it actually misclassified very few of the stage procedures.
Does that model include biomarkers that might change the coding? For instance, if interventionists are in the habit of checking troponins after every PCI, is that I'd give opportunity for gaming? If you don't check troponins, then you don't get coded as an acute MI.
Well, in that case, it would actually penalize you to check the troponins because you would be it would be included as a non-stage procedure if you do have an elevation, you get characterized as an MI. So I think it has the potential for misclassification. All I can speak to is the experience that Dr. Ho had spoken to us about.
With regard to the specific issue of harmonization, I believe the criteria are met.
Okay.
Okay. Distinctive or additive value, it is distinct. It's in the PCA population. We're not measuring anything akin to this that I'm aware of, so it's a C. So I think the criteria usability.
But would you rather have some kind of sub report of the non-MI? Because we're going to have an MI readmission 30-day, and then you have, you know what I mean? I don't know if there's overlap.
There certainly is overlap.
As far as it's additive, on top of that.
Well, but almost half of PCIs, not quite half, are generally in the non-ACS population. So there is a substantial overlap, but it is additive. Anybody want to vote to downgrade that to a P? No?
I agree with C.
Okay. And then overall, to what extent were the criteria of usability met, I think it's true.
Okay.
Okay. Feasibility 4A, data generated as a byproduct of the care process. I think that's by and large true. Let's see. Electronic sources, well, obviously we're in the midst of a transition to the EMR around the country, so not complete, but I would give it a P. Commentary?
That's a reflection of what we just said.
Okay. 4C, exclusions. Well, as proposed, the stage procedures are excluded. And I guess what we're hearing is the current ACC does collect that, although it's only a recent change, and the other data sources would be required to do so. So I think that's a C also. And when we get to D, except to be inaccuracies, errors, or unintended consequences. So I've spoken earlier to two unintended consequences. One is the increased length of stay, and one is the reporting, not reporting ACC and CDR. But the second one, I guess, is not valid based upon additional material presented in the end of the table. They're always concerned about gaming. It's a generalized concern. But once we move, one could easily choose to readmit somebody at day 31 instead of day 28. There are all sorts of potential gaming things, so I can't give this a C. I think it's a P.
Me.
Okay.
All right. And then business case, basically, is it a costly problem? The answer is yes. So 4E is my... from my point of view, it's a C. And the feasibility, so the overall feasibility, and the only issue is the 4D, the susceptibility to inaccuracies. So maybe I can get commentary as to relative to other performance measures you've discussed. I mean, most of these are susceptible to gaming. Is that sufficient to make it a P? Or is it a C?
We don't need your overall.
No.
Yeah.
Just
the
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm overstep my bounds.
No, probably overstep my time.
So thank you very much for indulging us on this one.
Okay.
Other commentary? And then I'll step aside.
There is a learning curve, and the first one always goes slowly, so that's perfectly fine. Thank you for taking the point. Committee members, any other comments on strengths and weaknesses you'd like to bring up? We just want to be sure we've captured them all.
Can I ask you a question? This is probably, refers to many other measures as well. It's the stratification and the how we deal with socioeconomic differences, racial differences, disparities. I mean, so this measure actually deals with this as well, different races, socioeconomic status has been brought up. And stratification is not one of the options in the risk assessment model.
Yes, by the end of the table that was the way it should be dealt with.
But it's not actually in here, 2H. There's nothing, no information about stratification at all. And I don't think
we never suggested that we would stratify. I'm sorry.
Somebody at the end of the table
I was just making a point that in terms of NQF policy, we say as part of our measure evaluation criteria, while we don't want to risk adjust away those differences in a risk model, we really would very much like to, when appropriate, and this is the key. I mean, we would like steering committees, for example, and PAPS to say to us, this is a measure, given what we know about the literature on this particular measure, that should be stratified. We actually have a set of criteria we've used to mark through our ambulatory portfolio, for example, disparity-sensitive criteria. And we would specifically look to see what this is a measure, if there are significant and known disparities that the committee may want to recommend, this is a measure you might want to also look at stratified to examine disparities.
That could be a comment, a recommendation, or you know something that you bring forth if you believe that that's the case. Irene, did you have a thought on that?
I think as a general approach to this, I think that we should look at all of these measures for possibly stratifying.
Exactly.
Is there such a measure that's not applicable? We deal with so many things that it seems like everything we'll talk about. Applicable to look for those, but is there something? Can you give an example of a current measure where that's totally not applicable?
I could do the converse, which is we'd be happy to share the disparity-sensitive criteria that the ambulatory group used. I mean, it's true, there are obviously disparities in a lot of areas. Stratifying data, at least in our current non-electronic environment, the race and ethnicity and other issues are not uniformly captured, is a pretty significant feasibility lift. So at least what we tried to do, and actually Lisa was involved in this initial project on the ambulatory care side, was make the case that where there are known disparities in the literature, clearly for this particular measure, that NQF would also recommend as part of its guidance that this is a measure that should be stratified to examine disparities. So it's more an issue of saying, and I'm happy to share with you this afternoon, I'll bring it back from the office. These are not our offices, by the way. Ours are not this fancy. We rent this one. Just on the other side, I'll bring back what the four criteria look like, just so you can get a sense. It essentially gets at issues of prevalence, the quality problems that relate to disparities, whether there's evidence or something you could do to reduce disparities by measuring and improving in that particular area. So there's a set of criteria that we use. But again, if there are measures that come up to you that you say, boy, this is an area we know there are significant and known disparities, we would definitely consider that and try to examine whether it should be considered a disparity-sensitive measure.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, this has not actually been appropriately analyzed for this particular outcome. One can suspect that it's the case based upon analogous outcomes, but I don't think, first of all, there's not that much of the literature on 30-day readmissions after PCI. I don't think anybody's actually looked at it.
Yes. And that may be the case, and that's why the criteria specifically require that there's evidence that...
But to leave it off simply because there's no data, that's a problem.
Yeah, I would agree.
I mean, not data so much. I mean, issues that this is a known area doesn't have to be specifically data that suggests you could see race light. You could see...
Well, I will cite our own article, then, that I referred to earlier, and looking at outcomes after drug-eluting stents and bare metal stents, socioeconomic status with a strong independent correlative outcome.
That would be, I think, sufficient. I mean, I don't know that you need a whole lot more than that. I'm just saying these are things we'd like you to think about.
Wait, can I ask another question? How would one stratify by socioeconomic status? Is you just...
There are many ways, and it's controversial, and that's why I think this measure may be okay for rolling out on a limited basis, but it really needs to be refined somewhat before it meets the face value acceptability criteria.
And we could say that.
Sure, Dr. Schuster.
I have a general. This measure had the clinical set of data as a basis for analysis. There are some of them who had an administrative set of data. And I would say that if you look at the clinical set of data analysis, you put much more weight on it than on the administrative set of data. There should be an effort across the board measures to use the clinical set of data as much as possible, because the administrative set of data, if you compare that to the level of an institution on anything else, that is a significant disparity sometimes. So I think that should be a major overarching goal, I would say. There's a lot of measures of administrative set of data which are not as strong for the improvement processes or the judgment or whatever you do with the other stuff.
So to come back, the responsibility of the TAP, and thank you for all of your thoughtful comments, is to make judgments and to make comments on the sub-criteria. And then we collate that information and we'll encourage feedback before the steering committee meeting. But currently, I think we've gone through all the criteria and made judgments, and that's not the final word. It's what we really sit now. I think it would be appropriate at this time to take comments, public comments, and then after that, I think it would be appropriate to take a break. Yes.
I'm Bonnie Weiner. I'm representing the Society for Cardiovascular Angiography and Intervention, and would like to support many of Dr. Ellis's comments about the specifics related to PCI. There are a couple of issues. I think the 15-day window is more meaningful because of the attributable issue. It's not clear that this is, although an important measure, I think everybody would agree that readmission is a big issue, but whether we could actually modify the readmission rate and what the benchmark level is has not been defined, and I think we don't know what the potential impact is. I think we have to separate this from many of the other measures, that this is not a disease state measure. This is specifically targeted at a procedure, and therefore the attribution becomes much more critical than a disease state measure such as heart failure that was discussed earlier, because I think there are many more issues that go into that than there is this, and that the influence of cardiac rehab and other things that are now well documented in the recent literature may, in fact, in the same way that socioeconomic access to care impacts, and that's not something, excuse me, that may be specifically attributable or operationalized by the PCI operators or systems. And so that, and I would, I guess I need to preface this last comment with a slight conflict of interest, because I am the president of an organization called Accreditation for Cardiovascular Excellence that within the next year will be accrediting cath labs on a voluntary basis. And part of our process is, in fact, to validate the actual data that's being submitted to a variety of sources. But I am concerned about the comparability of data that is supplied from multiple vendors, because I think there can be a great deal of variability in how those data get acquired. And finally, getting back to the patient, I think we do have to look at what systems will do to, quote, game the system, and that's not necessarily a derogatory comment, but the realities are that if there's a 30-day window, then there are opportunities for patient care to be compromised because of delay of care for unrelated diseases that would not be applicable if the window was shortened to something that was really attributable to the PCI procedure. Thank you.
Other comments? Yes.
Yeah, I'm Joel Harder. I'm the Director of Quality Improvement at SCOT. I just wanted to say the gap in measurements here, what I've heard is that the handoff for follow-up care, there's no measure in place to get a high-risk patient in 5 days. And also, there's not a measure to assure that these patients are going to cardiac rehab for their 36 sessions. That's important to know in readmissions, if it's preventable and avoidable, and I think that's important. Also, to realize these measures are going to be utilized for penalties, that's legislatively, that's going to happen, so that we need robust measures. If there are any gaps in the documentation, I implore you to ask CMS to fill those documents and put it on paper, because when you leave the table, it's handed off to the next person, and they only get a much shorter time to review this information than you do. So it's important for you to translate your information into that document so that the steering committee can vote on this in the adequate way. So thank you. These comments were really good.
Yes, I just add one other thing, and that is these are inpatient-only measures. Increasingly, PCI patients are being moved into the outpatient setting, and it's highly variable from region to region. For hospitals that are being the most aggressive in saving Medicare money by moving patients whenever possible into the outpatient setting will probably be penalized because they have a sicker risk, a sicker mix of patients that are staying inpatient. And there also could be some gaming when patients come back to the hospital as to whether or not they're admitted or treated as outpatients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just to respond to this, so I think what you're saying is that the goal is to make sure that the denominator is equal for all hospitals, such that it's all PCIs are represented in the denominator for the patient. If you look at the measure methodology, we did take into both in the denominators of all hospitals are inpatient PCIs as well as observation state PCIs in the index to define the denominator. You're correct that in the follow-up period, if there's a different threshold for admission applied to different hospitals, that might affect their readmissions rate. That may be one way in which this is at least partly beneficial, is that it sets the resource standard for by which these patients or hospitals look at their processes for assigning inpatient or observation stay for patients who come back. I don't know if that's hypothetical.
One issue that I think we should at least pay attention to is the proposal that we have a 15-day rather than a 30-day window.
Or both.
Well, and perhaps that's the case since the ICD measure has both a 30 and a 90-day measure. So I think it's important for us to understand why ICD has two windows and PCI has one, and whether or not those are equally valid.
I think I'm mishearing this, but what I think Joel had said is that it'd be useful, maybe potentially useful, to have 15 days for one purpose and a 30 day for another purpose, which I think is different than what ICD is doing. ICD complications, we're looking at different time frames for the specific complications.
Right.
We're not reporting two specific hospital standardized complication rates. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but it still raises the question about stratification based on clinical criteria.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Dr. Rich.
Regarding this 15 versus 30 days, are there data on what proportion of readmissions from 15 to 30 days could be construed as being procedure related in one way or another?
There aren't hard data, and we actually, and I live in Massachusetts, so I'm subject to the realities of audited data versus non-audited data. We've actually requested from NASDAQ those data, and there's been a several-month delay in terms of us getting the readmission data from NASDAQ, so I don't have the answer. The experience, though, is that the majority of procedure-related readmissions occur within the first 7 to 15 days as opposed to 15 to 30 days.
So I think that's the key point, because if it turns out that that there is a significant drop-off from 15 days to 30 days, then it makes sense to me to look at the 15-day criteria. But that if it's a substantial proportion, even if there's a drop-off, if a substantial proportion of those readmissions from 15 to 30 days are still procedure related, then it would make sense to me to still include those.
Right. And the general sense from the available data is the majority of the attributable risk is within the first 15 days, and that beyond that, it's readmission for other systemic, maybe perhaps cardiovascular issues, but not issues that are attributable to the actual procedure. And that's where we get into the differences between procedure-related analysis versus disease-related.
Can I just speak to that also?
The acute renal failure that ends up in a readmission in 20 days, that's still procedure-related.
Right.
Did you want to see that on the phone?
This Harlan Krumholz. I just have a few comments. Let me just address that one first. I think this is very important for the committee to understand what we're trying to accomplish here. And you also have to understand the sort of background political issues are that many of the interventionalists, and SCAI in particular as an organization, although they were participating in our work group, fairly after participating, they had issues with the measure and are expressing them. What we've tried to say, and we respect our colleagues and respect their opinion, of course, they're excellent clinicians and well, they embrace measurement, they're not fighting measurement, they want good measurement, we do too, we happen to have a difference of opinion about the measure, and that's been expressed in letters and in some discussions. There is some difference of opinion, I think, is in the point Bonnie just made, which I just want to at least be clear about this. Our view of this is that we're trying to put together and assemble a portfolio of measures which address a variety of conditions and a variety of patient groups. And there was a sense, we moved to PCI for two reasons. One, there's a sense that there is a coherent team that's taking care of these patients, that they have some specific clinical needs and risks associated with the procedure that they've had. And importantly, it was an opportunity for us to move from administrative outcomes-based performance measures to ones that were based on clinical data collection, a move which had been suggested to us as being a good move by NQF and others around the country and clinicians and groups, saying it would be nice if you, NACC, importantly, said it would be nice if you developed some measures that were using risk adjustment based on clinical data, not the administrative claims. So PCI represented the opportunity to do that, and the recognition that the patients, again, were being cared by a coherent team and had some specific disease-specific or procedure-specific clinical needs, which is why you just don't do everybody, but that there was a group here. In this case, we are looking at this group and seeing them as a vulnerable patient population. That is, a group that ends up back in the hospital with a high frequency within 30 days of discharge. And if you look in that 30 days, you see the great majority of admissions aren't in the first 15 days. There are more admissions in the first 15 days, but throughout that early transition period, that period where people are leaving the hospital and needing to be connected with physicians, ensure that they understand what they're supposed to do and take, we find admissions for a wide variety of causes. Now, one of the points that we think is key here is it's not the interventional cardiologist's fault This is a system issue. This is an issue of whether there's a recognition of what these patients are at risk for. It doesn't mean there was a bad procedure done. It doesn't mean that there was a missed opportunity in the course of actually technically performing the procedure, even selecting the patients. It means that our system has largely failed these patients. And if you take, for all of us who are taking care of patients, we know. I mean, when the question was raised, can you actually lower this? All you have to do is follow any single patient on any single day in any single hospital in the country, and you know that there are multiple missed opportunities in these handoffs. There's information that gets fumbled. There's uncertainty around either teaching the patient what to do, their ability to get appointments afterwards, their understanding of their meds, their ability to get their meds. I mean, a whole range of things occurs, which compromises the ability of patients to be successful after discharge and results in what we see as relatively high readmission rates. I also think that the models don't have high C statistics because what's largely driving these readmission rates are problems in our system rather than the severity of disease of the patients. And this has been shown time and time again because every readmission model, using every clinical variable you can think of, fails to discriminate well between those who are readmitted and those who aren't. And every investigation about failures in handoffs finds things that we aren't measuring that are all system-related that seem to be responsible for many of these readmissions. Not all of them. We're not going to zero. But at least 20 to 30% of readmissions appear to be blatantly the result of failures of our systems. Now, so in this case, we have, I think, need to conceptualize this. It's not just about the procedure, but about this group of patients vulnerable with some disease-specific needs and an area where we can begin to pioneer the use of clinical data. And when we've done this, we use the NCDR database because it existed, was employing two-thirds of the PCI hospitals in the country, and gave us broad-based generalizability in the development of the model. If the model gets implemented, it's going to be a minimum data set that's going to be required of all hospitals to submit on patients who undergo PCI. And for those who are submitting to NCDR, they're going to be able to just simply have that sent to CMS, and others will have to find vendors to do it. The standardized definitions that exist within NCDR and for which the measure was generated are going to be applied, and there will need to be auditing that's implemented. Now, if the committee rejects the idea that the quality of the data is good enough, you are setting a bar where it's going to be impossible to use clinical data ever, because this is as good as medical charts, and the problems that you're identifying are going to be the problems that everyone is going to face. Now, that doesn't mean this is perfect, and it doesn't mean that it's not going to have to be improved, but the issue of saying that there is possible gaming so that it's not good enough is going to be, I mean, whether you have electronic records, whether you have taking it from charts, whether you're taking it from data that they're submitting, we're going to have to find ways to audit these to give ourselves enough confidence to be able to push ahead of these, or we're going to have to give up on outcomes-based measurement. And by the way, this also applies to process. You could say the same thing about the process measures. Multiple vendors, there is some variability at the hospitals in how they're documenting contraindications, in what they're submitting for these. So we might as well just shut down the entire measurement process because it's going to be it's an issue every day, and we're just going to need to fight to make standards that are going to be able to work, but it's the bar has to be reasonable. These aren't going to be perfect measures. And so at the end of the day, that's what we did. Now, the only other thing I want to mention is that we put together working groups of experts around the country, including Sky, and I said we respect their ability, their what they finally feel now about the measure, but experts from ACC and all of this discussion here, we did our best with a technical expert panel and working groups of interventional cardiologists, experts in quality, experts in statistics, experts in methodology, and this was, at the end of the day, the sort of a compromise. You cannot forge complete consensus on these measures, 15 days, 30 days, 45 days, 90 days. You'll see the ICD measure is a little bit different. We tried to yield to finally the expert consensus that was driven, but we didn't get, I guess what I'm saying is you get consensus, but you don't get unanimity. I can't even pronounce that. You can't get everyone to agree. And this is what we've got at the end of the day for this measure. If the group does want to push it back to us, we're going to ask for very clear suggestions about, I mean, I heard several times they say, well, if you made it better, and I guess for us at the end of this long process, we're not sure how you make it better with what the current standards, what currently is available to us. But I appreciate the good discussion and want to thank everyone for the dedication. I know this isn't easy work, but I just at least wanted to make those points.
Thank you. So at this point, I guess the final point that I guess I would make is that the aim for this is for public reporting, and it's really up to us to try to ask the right questions to allow patients to make decisions. Patients now are frequently given the choice between bypass surgery or PCI, and the more data they have and the more they can believe in, I think it's going to be useful. But if the data is not usable in that way, then I think it's going to be a real problem for us as clinicians. So I think we're overdue for a break, and I want to thank everyone's input and good thinking. Why don't we take, should we take 10 minutes, because then we'll have a lunch break sooner than planned, and we'll come back and talk about ICD.
Okay.
Mm.
Is that
it?
I think we did.
And thank you. Appreciate you coming in.
No problem. Now I get to go over the office.
Oh, that's okay.
Yes, but that's okay.
You don't need me here.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take the table for the officer.
No. You're all set. You're all set.
We're going to move forward for the rest of the surgery. So he was at some involvement. Haven't gotten as much feedback from
I'm actually going to head back.
I could have spotted this issue earlier. It was in the House. It was finally enacted. And also in the Senate. Brother Pure refers to organizations approved by 1898, measures approved by 1898 organizations, which you really have to do some research to figure out. And then, of course, the ACC and we have focused on how to reform as correctly as the legislation specifically to be translated after readmission measures. $7 to $9 billion in penalties applied to the hospital as a whole based on that.
What's remarkable, and I depend on Elizabeth Dry, who's our policy clinician, translator person, what she's outlining for me is really just specifically how they're proposing to do these penalties. And it sounds kind of...
American Hospital Association is even more...
Yes.
I could tell you more.
But I think I really echo your point that this repeatedly, but I think it's very important. Why are we being where are all these other conditions? We have pneumonia.
I was discussing it with clients of specialty medicine. They were laughing at us. You cooperated with these fools.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and unless they...
Extend the default measures now?
unless they can reconcile that disparity. You know, that's a real disparity. You know, we talk about socioeconomic status. It's going to kill. And then, you're right. No one, especially going forward, who in their right mind is going to want, unless you can offer a significant benefit, either a voice in how it's going to be.
The PQRI measures, using it for PQRI, that's relatively trivial compared to $7 to $9 billion in sanctions on hospital, based on just three measures. I apologize for not understanding that you were looking at the outpatient data. Part of what confused me there is referring to it as Part A data. And outpatient payments are actually they're run from intermediaries, but it's part from the data. Part B trust fund.
And I'm certainly not an expert on this today, but the outpatient the hospital services that are provided as an outpatient basis confirm this by double checking, is in hospital Part A outpatient data. So there's a separate file in the administrative data that has hospital procedures performed on outpatient basis. What we did, just to make sure, because we weren't 100% that would be the case, is we did look at the whole cohort of patients who had a PCI in the Part B data and the cohort of patients who had it in the hospital A outpatient data, and they were identical. So I'm very confident that we are capturing the whole.
It may be semantics then, but I thought the Part A data and the outpatient data were completely separate data sets based
that's
on the ABC system. And that is
going to
be funded out of the Part B trust.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that observation stays are in the Part A.
I'm just confused in that outpatient
thing. Is that the speaker working?
Part B funded.
Oh, yeah.
Is it in the same data set as the
Part A? I knew it.
Yeah.
Sounded great.
The OP.
outpatient hospital outpatient is a big part.
They did, even though it's funded out of the Part B trust fund.
I never look from that perspective.
Okay,
I don't know from data.
That's
we collected, we
okay.
got those data, so I don't know how to explain that, but I just checked.
And it's built through the APC system, not the because most outpatient billing go through the APC.
Yeah, you're right. Outpatient, we don't pay DRG. I don't think we right. No. Right.
It's based on the ICD-9 system for
billing. Yeah, I know, but the Part B billing is on the APC system. I'm just going to send
you a picture.
Yeah, I'm out of my expertise too. So.
Yeah. But I think it, from our point of view, we look at the data and we find them. But from point, from perspective, like I said, payment,
cup of data.
Part B for us is setting lab, physician office, you know, that kind of data.
Yeah, we can ask Mitt part of that on the next call.
Yeah, we can
just to clarify,
one, we might want to match it up because I think now about 20% of patients are being done outpatient. Match up the physician billing. So
right, that's what we did.
The total should be
that's
about the same.
Okay. That it is
yeah.
virtual minimum. Five or ten.
Is that,
so there's a CPT code, but no
correspondence. Five to 10% is close.
Okay. 5% total, not percent.
But
very
same.
They're
going to
take
one.
Yeah, I'd love to drive you, but I parked my car about 6 blocks away. I looked at the appointment and I read the hotel rather than the meeting.
Yeah.
Process in place right yet.
Cheers.
We do have a
a process for process of care. That would be the model.
Background of what sudden cardiac death is, ICD, what have you, give you a very brief overview of the ICD registry, and then jump to start talking about the measure and delve into the evaluation form. So, as many of you know, sudden cardiac death is the most common cause of death in this country. It claims the lives of close to 350 to 400,000 people each year, and you know, many people have been identified to be at an increased risk for sudden cardiac death, including people with systolic dysfunction, and based on the results of many randomized clinical trials, we know that the implantable cardioverter defibrillator improves the survival of patients with significant systolic dysfunction, and so that actually
evidence led that to actually coverage for implantable cardioverter defibrillators back in 2005, when they did that, actually mandated that all data on patients who are receiving an ICD for a primary prevention indication, so these are not patients who had a cardiac arrest, but they are patients who are at an increased risk for sudden death based on their low ejection fraction. They mandated that all data on Medicare patients receiving an ICD for a primary prevention indication be entered into an ICD registry. And this ICD registry was launched by the ACC-NCDR, unlike the CAS-PCI registry that we discussed for the last couple of hours. Participation in the ICD registry is actually mandatory, it's not voluntary, but that's for patients, for Medicare patients who are receiving an ICD for primary prevention. However, I'm glad to report that more than 85% of hospitals participating in the ICD registry actually submit data on all their patients who receive an ICD primary prevention or secondary prevention, be it for Medicare or non-Medicare patients, and participation in the ICD registry has been the case in more than 1,400 hospitals. So in terms of what we need to discuss today, it's a measure that the Yale Group is proposing to the staff. It's a measure that looks at ICD complications. As I mentioned, ICDs are beneficial. Unfortunately, the procedure that we do sometimes is associated with complications that could be fatal or at least life-threatening. And so if you review all the literature, you'll find that up to 10% of these procedures are typically complicated by something, either an infection or a mechanical complication like a lead dislodgement or some sort of puncturing the lung, puncturing the heart, what have you. So what the Yale Group proposed here is a measure that looks at 30-day pneumothorax or hemothorax with a chest tube, 30-day hematoma plus blood transfusion or evacuation, 30-day cardiac tamponade or cardiocentesis, 30-day death, 90-day mechanical complications requiring system revision, 90-day device-related infections, and 90-day additional ICD implants. And what I would like to first say is I'd like to commend the Yale Group for putting this measure together. Overall, I do not have any major concerns about this proposal or the proposed measure. However, I think there are a few areas that can be improved. Clinically, I think these proposed time frames make a lot of sense. Typically pneumothorax or hemothorax or cardiac tamponade or what have you, those usually manifest themselves very early after the procedure. 30-day death, I think, is reasonable. I think if you were to extend that to 90 days or longer, attributing the death to the actual procedure would be very difficult to do. And then 90-day complications requiring system revision, like lead dislodgement, what have you, very reasonable, as well as 90-day device-related infections and additional ICD implants. So with that, I can actually delve into the actual evaluation form unless people have any questions or any concerns.
That was great. Thank you.
Okay, so the first criterion here is importance to measure and report. I completely agree that this is a measure that is important to report on. I think the Yale Group made a very good case for that as well, so I gave them a C for 1A. I believe that opportunity for improvement, I gave them that's 1B. I gave them a C there. Outcome or evidence to support measure focus, that's 1C. I gave them a C as well. And, I had no concerns at all regarding this initial criterion. I'm trying to go through my electronic records here. And in terms of variability in care, that has been very well demonstrated
So, again, no weaknesses there.
So, maybe you could just clarify one thing. When you were giving the background, you indicated that up to 10% of these procedures are associated with some types of complications. But in my experience, at least, most of these are relatively minor complications, hematomas and so forth. And the more major complications, those that require transfusions or punctures and tamponade and those kinds of things, tend to be a lot less frequent. Was your 10% figure referring to the more major, serious, potentially life-threatening?
No, actually, 10% includes everything.
Yeah. So my question then is, what proportion of these procedures are associated with serious or potentially life-threatening complications, which is really the focus of this measure? And then the second related question will be, which we'll get to, I'm sure, later on, is the issue of variability. How much variability in complication rate is there from one center to another? But mostly I'm interested in the complication, the estimate of the serious complication rate, which is the focus of this measure.
The focus of this measure is the 10% that I just mentioned.
The 10%.
Yes, it's actually because it does cover mechanical complications requiring revisions, you know, lead dislodgements, what have you. It does cover infections. We actually did an analysis, and I think Jeff can add to that, but we did an analysis using the Medicare claims data. And we found that the rate was about close to, you know, 10%, 10 to 14%. There was some variation in the rate in terms of looking at trends, and we found that actually the trend was going, you know, was going down. But I don't know, Jeffa, if you want to add anything based on your analysis of the ICD register.
So if you look at there are four papers that have been published on using administrative data to identify complications after ICD. They've reported ranges of complication rates between, I think, 8 and 16%, depending. And this is a slightly modified approach to that that addresses the question, which is that not all complications are equal and equivalent, and some, you know, to weight death with a hematoma that's trivial is really not applicable or not, doesn't have any base validity to it. So what we did in conjunction with the working group and the TEP was to really try and hone in on those complications that were at least seemingly more serious. So for pneumothorax, it's pneumothorax with a chest tube, hemothorax, same thing with a chest tube. For hematoma, it was hematoma, not just any hematoma, but hematoma associated with a transfusion and or an actual mechanical evacuation. So to the extent possible, we're trying to focus on the more clinically significant complications.
So I guess my question still is that with respect to importance to measure, I mean, I would argue that it's not important to measure the minor hematomas that you're including this 10%. So I still would ask the question of what's the typical rate of serious or potentially life-threatening questions? The ones that you just alluded to, how often do those occur?
Well, at least in our data, for the measure it's proposed, the complication rate is, in 2007, it was 7.1%, and in 2006, it was 6.2% or so.
That's just the more major complications.
So that's all of them, and then hematoma, for instance, hematoma with blood transfusion or evacuation represented about 1% of that. Does that answer your question?
And so I'm not sure. What proportion of the 7% are relatively minor hematomas that don't require any intervention?
We excluded those from that rate.
It's not
right.
Right.
Okay. So it's the rates are only those that were associated with an intervention.
Other questions?
There's no differentiation between or among the patients who just have an ICD electrode versus ones who have upgrade of a biventricular pacemaker or dual chamber pacemaker at the same time. So there's that data may be gathered, but it's all inclusive in terms of the denominator.
Yes, my understanding is it is, but in Jeff's analysis of the ICD registry actually showed that if you were to get a dual chamber ICD, let's say, compared with a single chamber ICD, the complication rate was actually higher.
Sure, and that makes sense for renal failure because you're giving dye and that sort of thing.
Well, but like infections, and what happens if the procedure is longer, the dislodgement rate, now you're dealing with two leads instead of one, and so definitely the complication rate goes, is definitely higher.
That's a covariate in the model, but we didn't stratify it by the type of device.
Is there
I'm sorry.
Is there information in this about redos versus primary?
Yes.
In the database there are. And what about experience or training of implants for?
Yeah, this was not included in the model. This was a question that I wanted to raise because, you know, you created this logistic regression model and included many, you know, clinically important covariates, but I didn't see anything related to the operator's experience or volume of implants or what have you. Was that even considered as a covariate?
Well, we would not want to consider that because that's one of the mechanisms by which this measure could improve quality of care. So
I'm just asking.
As I read it, though, the first, this is only first implants because the prior implants.
Just, yeah.
So that, you won't have a measure of if this is your second or third or fourth.
About the body facing, if it's part of the procedure, that it's part of the captured data or not?
It is part of the captured data. So the other thing that Jeff actually very nicely showed in his paper that was published in JAMA is the variation in, you know, by size. It wasn't that included in that paper, Jeff, where you showed in terms of the complication rate, like at this, there were certain sites that had a much lower complication rate than other sites. In fact, the range that I'm aware of is that you have anywhere from single digits up to 22 or 24%. I don't know if that was in your paper or not, but I'm aware based on discussions with Steve and other people that there is a big variation in this complication rate where you have the single digits at, you know, the tertiary referral centers who, you know, highly experienced, high volume, what have you, and the smaller hospitals, lower experience, where the rate actually could go as up as high as 22-24% is what I saw most recently. So I did not have any concerns about point number one. I gave them C's for all the criteria, sub-criteria.
Any other comments or in group? I don't agree.
So with regard to the scientific rigor of the measure, in terms of how well it was specified, I think they did a very good job specifying the measure. It couldn't have been more specific. As an implanting physician, I think the time frames that they picked make a lot of sense to me. Anybody opposing to the C that I gave or specification?
Questions or comments about specification?
Is there still any disparity among electrophysiologists about who makes the pocket and who implants the device? It used to be that a surgeon would make the pocket, and now most electrophysiologists.
Actually, most electrophysiologists now make their own pockets.
Is that part of the registry about who does that?
No, I don't think so. That's not really captured. But I can tell you, I mean, at least when I first started my training, which was a while back, you know, electrophysiologists were making their own pockets. The main reason why we had to rely on the surgeons early on was because the devices were much bigger. We had to go into abdominally. Now we can put it in the chest, or, you know, subcutaneous. So that's where am I? So that's 2A. To B is has to do with.
I just had another comment on 2A. I'm sorry, if you go on for some reason. The denominator, and this may apply to other measures. If someone could explain to me what it means by it, there's other measures in the same patient stay exist with the data as bundles. Any claim other than the first is excluded. If someone could explain this to me, what that means. So they're excluding patients, like for instance, if you were having some other admission. I don't know, that's how I'm reading this. That you would exclude those patients who have another primary admission. This is only primary admits for ICD.
So, two things. Number one, it's not just patients who are electively admitted for this procedure specifically. It includes all implants, aside from reimplantation. It's all implants. That specific exclusion criteria, I, having spent the last year working with this, still do not understand that exclusion criteria. But the statisticians that I work with, and they have a fuller understanding of how claims are bundled together, they said that you cannot include that particular group of patients. It has something to do with the attribution to the institution, I think. But I've asked for clarifications, and I apologize. I don't have. It's a very small. I think if you look at the float chart of the percent of patients that that affects, it's a very small percentage. It's actually two patients.
Okay. So 2B is reliability. Initially, I wasn't sure I knew what reliability meant, so initially I gave you an N, but after you provided all the explanation from the NQF staff as well as from you, Jessa, I would say partially. I know that we have a system in place to audit data in the ICD registry. It's actually 10% compared with the 5% that you have in CAS-CCI. And I know that the first audit was completed. I haven't seen the results. I don't know if you can give us any information on the first audit that was done. And this was a random sample of hospitals that submitted data to the ICD registry. It was a 10%.
So the results are in. I've looked at them.